Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday we dwelt on the subject of God. That God is the ultimate goal of all religions. All masters who came in the past, they gave out about the existence of God in various ways, to the best they could. Because you see, the limitless, infinite cannot be put in finite terms, you see. But anyhow, to the best they could, they did explain about the existence of God, you see, in their own ways. And of course, in the languages which were prevalent at the time when they did visit the earth. You see. They left us a fine record of the valuable experiences they had with themselves and with God. So all masters who came in the past, each one of them left us some heritage, I would say, in the form of Holy Scriptures. So all those scriptures are so many pages of the Book of God that have been written so far, and there may many more be written, you see. Whenever the Master will come, they will speak about God, you see, and about the experiences they have with Him, just to show other people that there is some reality, you see, which the Masters who came in the past, they did contact, and their scriptures which they left with us, they are parallel on the subject, you see. A comparative study of religion showed us that all masters had to say the same thing practically about the essential parts of their religion. You see? They all did say there is one God. They all said God is light. They all did say, well, we have seen God and bear testimony to it. They did say, in their own words, of course, that God knows the pole at which He works, the Son of Man, you see. And the pole at which God works, who is the mouthpiece of God, He knows about the Father. And others whom the Son of Man reveals, you see. A teacher of a man is naturally a man, you see. If we say we don't need any teacher, then in that case we need books. Well, of course, books were written by somebody. Books give only what the writer says, you see. So if we don't need any man, we need books. If we need books, that means we need somebody. Well, you go through books, you've got some doubt in you, well, books cannot speak. Again, you have to run up to somebody who knows something on the way, just to reconcile, or the author of it. Well, author has left the body. Who can you consult? Naturally, some other body who is conversant, adept on this, in the subject, about which you have read in the book. So this is what was the subject yesterday, first, that there is a reality. The truth is one. It has never changed, you see. The same truth was in the beginning, in the middle, and even now. The natural laws do not change. Natural laws do not change, you see. Whenever masters came, they simply revived that truth which was the old, old one. They never invented any new thing, because the God is the same reality they experienced, to whatever extent they did give references to what they had experienced with that reality. For instance, this is a building, you see, so many of you have come here. If you belong to various countries, you go back, you write in your own language of the country to which you belong, just a description of this building. Well, salient points will agree, no doubt. But there may be some, minor things about which one may have said something, the other may have omitted altogether. The third one may have been more description, glowing account of that, you see. The man who had not seen this building, he simply reads those books written by those who have gone back. Naturally, he cannot reconcile at times what it is, how is it. But those books you read out with while sitting at the feet of somebody who has seen this building, in that case, he will say, oh yes, I have seen this means that thing. There is no doubt about it. Similarly, all these scriptures we can read, but the right import thereof we cannot understand at times until we hear those scriptures from somebody who has had that experience with the Self and with God. So religion was, what may be said, an endless experiment with truth, you see, which prophets gave out, and all masters who came in the past, they gave out. All the known truths, I will say, may be taken as pebbles on the seashore of God, you see. And the more you advance, the more greater that reality appears to be, you see. If you just scale it with the finite intellect we have got, we'll say something about it, but we cannot say everything. And you see, that subject of God still remains as fresh as ever. You know, got so many scriptures from all prophets and masters and teachers and sages who came in the past. With all that, the subject of God is still unsaid, you see. And that will remain unsaid even. However, I think the same number who have come in the past, I think 100-fold times more number, if they come up again, even then the subject is unsaid, it will remain unsaid. That was the subject of the yesterday. Well, God made man. Then we came up to the subject that God made man, you see. Man was given equal privileges by all, by nature. There is no difference between the east or west, you see, and north or south. No difference whether you belong to one social religion or the other. After all, who are you? You are a man, you see. Man has the same privileges from God as any other man. So all mankind is one. Man is highest of all creation, you see. And it is said when the body of man was created, you see, and the life was infused into it, God ordered angels to bow to the man body. So great is man. For the reason God resides in man, well, macrocosm is in the microcosm. If you know how to go within, God, or fathom, the mystery lying within, you know still more from day to day that greater still grows still greater. So that was further subject we dealt with yesterday. God made man and man made social religions. Social religions were made for the uplift of man. We had to make the best use of them. these are meant in no way as, excuse me, as fetters to bind men to one prison or the other. That is only for the uplift of man, you see. Just as Christ said, you see, Sabbath was made for man, and man was not made for Sabbath. We have to make the best use of the Sabbath day. The whole controversy arose from there, you see. Then Christ did say, well, look here, one of the sheep of your flock is just go astray, will you not be after finding out that astray sheep? But those who just simply follow the letter of the rule, they were just blindfolded, they would not listen to that, and they raised a hue and cry against Christ, you see. Ultimate result was that he was put to the cross. And anyhow, we are not entering into that way, but only to show that these religions, so to say, were made for the uplift of man. The wrong way of preaching has set one social religion against the other. The purpose was to make the best use, just like as a midwife would help in bringing out children at the time of birth. Similarly, the social religions were helping factor on the way. This is a preparatory ground, because man is social, you see. He has to live in some social body, and for that reason certain rules, certain ways were set, so that the man may have this peaceful earthly sojourn, you see. Man may become a world citizen. This is the outlook of man, which we had yesterday. But still greater, there is another thing, is there are higher values of life. Man is composed of physical body and astral body and causal body. These are the vestures. These are according to the planes in the cosmos, you see, in the macrocosm. These were given for the purpose that whenever man would like, he may work in the physical plane through the physical body. And if he would like to just transcend that thing to the astral body, he may work to the astral plane, and further to the causal body, to the causal plane, and then he will transcend all these and know oneself and ultimately know God. That was the purpose. But pity it is that we have only stuck fast in the physical body alone. We do not know whether there is something beyond it or not, you see. So we have to just unfathom this mystery, you see, unravel this mystery which we have. So man is composed of physical body, intellect and soul. Well, physical body is a very valuable thing, you see. It is really, truly speaking, the temple of God. Outer temples were made after the image of man, you see, dome-shaped and nose-shaped. We had to just enter inside to find ourselves and to find God, both together, living in the same house, I would say. Pity it is that one has not the opportunity just to first find himself and then to see other. One Mohammedan saint said that whatever I think we have done with our own self, no, even a blind man has not done with himself, you see, because the indweller of the house we have not seen. It is there, but we do not see. That's a pity. So this is a subject, you see. Whenever we do read scripture, you see, people do preach us. But whenever you ask, well, what is what, they simply quote verse books to you, you see. The main thing lies, our own experience should say about God and about the other world, and not that certain prophet or book says so, you see. They are helping factors. By reading the old books we come to the conclusion that there is a life beyond, that you are the indweller of the house, of the body which you are carrying, you see. There are greater possibilities within you. You can see God also resides in you. If you but know yourself, you will be able to know God. These are things given in the books. But the point arises, have you ever entered this body inside to see that you are the indweller of this house? Have you ever analyzed to see all that? If so, well and good. Otherwise, you have been reading books so far, but you know little or nothing about these things. So that is why the masters lay great stress on that, you see. You must be able to see for your own self what is what. You need not quote only books and scriptures, or some prophet, or some master who came in the past that he has to say so much like that. But it is you who should say what is your experience with yourself with God. Generally when we ask somebody, well, is there a God, and what do the people say? Well, yes, Bible says so. Quran of the Prophet Muhammad says so. Six scriptures say so. Such and such master and sage or the rishi who came in the past, he says so. Well, what have you to say on this subject? That's the point. This says so, that's discorrect. No doubt about it. But have you got any experience with yourself or God? Simply reading out scriptures is not the only thing required, I would say. I put it in a very mild way, you see. That is the elementary step. But what is given in the scriptures, first you must be able to understand what is there. That is the first thing. But pity it is, I tell you, these are the practical experiences of those masters who came in the past with their self and with God. Practical, so how they analyze self from the outer body and the environments, how they knew themselves, and then what experience they had with God, they gave out a very glowing account of all that, you see. This is their statement, not yours. We will simply say, well, look here, sun rises at the definite time, you see, daily. Seasons change at their particular periods. And there's a watch, you see, that is just wound up someday after 48 hours, after 24 hours, sometimes after a week, sometimes a month. There's a maker of such a watch. So as a matter of inference, this great creation of the world must be some maker at the back of it, you see. This is what they have to say. As a matter of inference, they come to some conclusion that there is a God. But if you come across somebody, to the masters I tell you, you put them the question, well, is there a God? What have they to say? This question was put to, I say, Christ. He said, behold the Lord. He did not give any reason for that. He says, behold the Lord. That very question was put to Guru Nanak. Well, is there a God? Yes, I see my God everywhere. Then how can you see God? He said, those eyes are different with which you can see God. They don't give any as a matter of inference, you see. They see, they are competent to show others. Open though that particular eye which he can be seen, you see. Vast difference between the two. In those books, those scriptures which give an account of the experiences of the masters who came in the past, if you read only at the feet of somebody who has got experience that way, he will give you the right import of things, you see. If you hear those books, those scriptures from mere intellectual man who has got no knowledge of the practical side of things, he has never come about the body consciousness, his inner eyes never been open to see the light of God, and he has not been able to transcend into beyond and traverse higher. Well, if he hears from such a man, he will simply give some statements, you see, only in an intellectual way. There may be many more things which he would not be able to explain. Or as if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. What interpretation and only an intellectual man can give about it. So this is a practical side of things. So my point is that if you want to just understand the true import of the scriptures at our hand today, then we should just sit by somebody who has got experience, practical experience of that, first hand. He will give you the right import of things. So such people, you see, masters, whenever they come, they simply give an account of their experiences, which are parallel, as given in all scriptures we have now. The ultimate goal of all religions is to just produce perfect men. Be ye perfect as your Father is in heaven. Kabir, who is considered to be the father of spirituality in the East, he says, well, what should a man should be like? You see? He says, but by example, he says, let it be like a cloud of earth. Then he says, a cloud of earth just hurt the birds, you see. Then he goes on, let it be like a dust. Then he says, that it also be seriously clothing, you see. Then he said, no, let it be like water, you see. He says, that is also not the good idea, because water sometimes gets cold, sometimes warm, changes. And people ask me, after all, we should have some idea before us. He said, well, man should be like perfect as God himself, you see. All masters the same. That perfection is our goal, you see. And nature extends equal privileges to all men alike. As man is social, he has to live in some social body. The social body was made for the uplift of man. We had to make the best use of all of them. That is what is given out by the scriptures. They all say that God is one, you see. He resides in every heart, so all mankind is alike. We have to love God and love all humanity. These two commandments, if we live up to them, you see, there is peace on earth. Kingdom of God will come on earth, you see. We are simply reading out or considering by lips only, you see. We are not living up to it. If you love God and God resides in every heart, then how can you, well, kill them, steal them, you see, rob them of their possessions, and do any harm to them? No, you never think of it. That is, you find in very social religion there are some rituals and ceremonies. What do they say? Well, amongst the Hindu you'll find they consider it a very sacred thing. You just give milk to a snake, you see. Well, that is the idea, because God resides in all creation, so I have to love all, you see. Well, what did Christ say on the subject? He had to say the same thing practically in his own way. When he was asked, what should you do while treating other men? So what did Moses say? Moses said, we are tooth for tooth and nail for nail. Then he said, well, on account of the hard heartedness, how your hard heartedness, he gave that commandment. Then he said, what have you to say? He said, love thy neighbor as thyself. Then they put further questions to him, then what about those who are our enemies? Then he said, love thy enemies. You see, how vastly the self of the Master is expanded to embrace all creation. This is our ideal of each man. So the point is now further, when God is eyes in every heart, so there are higher values of things, we are maintaining the body, you continue to maintain it, truly speaking, the true temple of God, you see. Body is more valuable, you see, than the raiment, possessions and all of them. Life does not consist, man's life consists not in the abundance of the things he possesseth, mind that. But the life is more than the meat and body more than the raiment, you see. Body is the temple of God, you see. That's the very highest of all creation, I see. We have to make the best use of it. We are simply keeping it clean from outside and not from inside, you see. Temples of body outside, how clean we keep them inside and outside. The outer place, holy place of worship is made after the image of man, you see. Then true temple of the body is our own this self which we are carrying, you see. That is why I said, know ye not that ye are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you. Further, if any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy. For the temple of God is holy, the temple is here. So the body, man body which you are carrying with you, is the true temple of God. Until you enter inside, you come above it, you come above the body consciousness, you do not know yourself, and as such, because you do not know yourself, you cannot know God. It is the soul that has to realize and see God, you see. Nor the flesh, nor the body. This is what is said. Now this I say, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Neither does corruptible inherit incorruptible. So we have to keep this man body, which is the true temple of God, clean and pure, you see. Blessed are they that who are blessed, who are pure in heart, for they shall see God. So this is what is laid down by all who came in the power. That is what again further it is said, behold, the tabernacle of God is with man and he will dwell with them. This is not only Bible, I am quoting to you, other saints have also said the same. Body is the true temple of God, it is the true mask. You see? You turn towards God, you will have to find him where. When you come to him, ask him, what does he tell you? Well, look here, you are after God, then where to find him? People generally think that to go to a temple, you will find God in the temple, you see. And you find God in a mosque, another holy place of worship. Well, those are made by the hand of man, you see. God does not dwell in the houses made by the hand of man, isn't it? This is what he said. So that is why we have to just look at what they say, what they tell us. Well, look here, holy places of worship are made after the image of man. True temple is the body of man in which you live.
Hello, and welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first half of a talk given by Master in Hollywood, California, on August 3rd, 1955. Our reader this evening is Marcia Crosby. Go ahead, Marcia.
Hello, everyone. Today I will be reading Master's talk entitled Separation, which was given on January 20th, 1964. It begins with Madam Hardevi singing with much poignancy a poem written by Master Kripal Singh to his master, Sawan Singh. The poem tells of the anguish he feels in his heart on being separated from him. So Master says, "The hymn just now read out is a prayer from the disciple to the master. He says, 'It is you who have lacerated my mind, my heart. There is no remedy other than your own self. The remedy for the wound in this heart lies only in your hands. No other doctor can heal it. You are going away, but don't forget us.' That is a prayer." Well, Master does not forget, that's right. But still, out of the anguished heart comes the words of the disciple. "For God's sake, don't forget us. We cannot forget you, but you also must not forget us. We are, after all, your own. If you forget us, who will heal the pain in our hearts? What will be our own remedy? What remedy can there be for the heart which is aching to have a glimpse of the Master? Nothing else, no words, no consolation, will help. In the time of Lord Krishna, there were many gopis who were very much in love with him. Once, it happened that he remained away from them for some time, say about 6 or 8 months, and they could not reach him. They were crying disconsolately. Separation is a very bad thing. Two times are very difficult for a man who has developed love in his heart for someone. One, the time which has just passed in awaiting him, and the other, when he leaves him. Both are hard times. So Lord Krishna sent Uddho as a messenger to go and console the gopis. Console them. "Look here, God is everywhere. Master is everywhere. He is in your heart of hearts. He is the very controlling power of your own self in the body. Why are you worrying? He is the soul of your soul." Uddho went to them and spoke to them the best he could. With all that, they listened to it very calmly and finally told him, "Oh, Uddho, what you say is all right, but tell us, what remedy do you have with you for the eyes that are yearning to see the form of the Master?" This is a prayer from the disciple to the Master. Don't forget us. And usually you'll find, as a matter of fact, that the Master himself never forgets. But the disciple cries, "I have only one heart, and you have now taken possession of it. What am I to do? I can think of no one other than you yourself." There cannot be 10 or 20 hearts. You cannot devote one heart here, another there, and then another there. It is only one heart. Well, it is the throne of God. Don't let anybody sit on it except God. What do? We let every worldly thing sit there, and we dethrone God. Guru Arjan said, "The Master loves and remembers his disciples with every breath. Can a mother forget her small children? She might be working here, there, or anywhere. She might be in the kitchen, and the child might be lying in his room. But there's a connection. If the child moves, then her milk begins to come from her breast. If the little child cries, she at once runs to him and leaves everything behind, even the most valuable thing." Similarly, we are all children of God, of the God in man. He does not forget us. But because of the yearning of the heart, his disciple does pray like that. "Don't forget us. Even if you go away, we are still yours after all." But I tell you, it is the mother who first loves us, the child. The child's love is only reciprocal. The love that a master has for his children, for his disciples, comes from the level of the God in him. He loves his disciples as hundreds of mothers won't love their children. But he loves the soul, the development of the soul, with no consideration, no recompense, nothing of the sort. A mother may love her children with the hope that when they grow up, they will help her and care for her in her old days. But the master does not do that. He simply sees that they are all souls. The God in him thinks, "He is my child." The more we have yearning like that, the more our mind is cleansed of all the dross of the world. It is washed away with the tears that roll down from the eyes. That's the water. With that water alone can the dross of the filth of many past births be washed away. There are two ways to go to Mecca from India. One is on the sea, the other over land. But the way on the land is very sandy. There is a dearth of water. There are no communications through the deserts of Arabia, so it is very hard to reach the place of pilgrimage if you go on foot, or even on horses, and no one can cross the sands. But there is a way across the sea that takes you there in 3 days. So somewhere, Maulana Rumi said, "If you want to make a pilgrimage to God, go through the waters of tears. You'll go quicker than you can on the land or through the sands." What is meant by that? Any prayers that are said, any rites or rituals that are performed, or any scriptures that are read mechanically with dry hearts, like a gymnastic, won't help you to reach God. Your heart should be full. And that heart should overflow through the eyes. Once there was a pundit who was relating the story of Rama, reading it out of the scriptures in Sanskrit. An illiterate man was sitting listening to him and shedding tears like anything. The pundit thought, "Perhaps he has followed me very well." When the talk was over, the pundit called him and said, "You understood my sermon very well." The man said, "I did not follow a word of what you were saying." "Then why were you crying and weeping?" "I had the scene of Lord Rama before me, and my heart was full, and I was shedding tears all the time watching that scene. I never heard a word of what you said." So this sort of love is the foreshadow of coming things. When rain is coming, there are first clouds. When there are blossoms in the fruit-growing trees, there is hope for fruit. Similarly, the heart, which is full of anguish, which is yearning, which is overflowing with tears from the eyes, can reach God the quickest. And sometimes we never remember God. Days and days pass by and we never think of Him. Perhaps we have not seen all the aspects of keeping the spiritual diary. There is one very important thing about it, that during the day you are remembering the God in man. Otherwise you won't remember Him. At least at night you will think back, what have I been doing? I have to send in the diary. Is it not a great blessing? We never realize the truth of the things that are given us. All the time you say to yourself, oh, my Lord, I have not to do this, not to do that. So you are always thinking of the Master or the God in Him. Such a heart becomes the fittest to receive Him a quicker way. So that was a prayer, so very full of pathos, of yearning. Oh, Master, you are going away, but don't forget us. We cannot remember you unless you remember us. Our love is reciprocal, as I told you. So when two men, two disciples of the Master, sit together, naturally the remembrance of the Master comes, is it not so? This is the first reason why you are asked not to miss attending the group meeting. When you sit together, you think of the Master. And someone might say of his own accord, this is like this, the other is like that. And that way, the remembrance is revived. Another thing is what Christ said. When more than one man sits in my name, I am there. And moreover, you will develop receptivity. When Master initiates anybody, he resides with him from that very time. And he never leaves him unless he takes him to the lap of the Father. That is what is called God power, or Guru power, or Christ power. So such an attitude, such time spent, makes us fit. And when it comes, just sit in sweet remembrance. You will have a response when you are there. This is one of the poems I wrote when I was away from my Master. This is the state of mind that cannot be expressed in words. It has not been given to words to express the feelings of the heart, the yearning of the heart. So, such an attitude radiates in the atmosphere. It goes to cleanse away all foreign external thoughts for the time being. Just as when an eagle comes, all the sparrows fly away. So when the eagle of love comes anywhere, no thoughts arise there. So all masters say, the heart has been given to you as a sacred trust. Don't misappropriate it. It is meant for God. Let only God and no other thing sit on that throne. Such like prayers help you. These things gush out afresh from the heart. Only such like prayers help. Sometimes we have models, specimens of prayers given by past masters. But those are only the words they gave out. The words should come out, should gush out from our very hearts. Only a mechanical repetition of something cannot have an effect. If you love Him, you abide in His heart. Let my words abide in you, and you abide in me. How can you abide in Him? When you remember Him. The more you remember Him, the more He reacts. Do you see? And what does it cost? Anything? And time flies away like anything. At the time of separation from my Master, one time it was for 8 months, these things came out of my heart. The heart is only one, not two or three. How many have you got? One? Well, He wants your heart. When you give your heart, what remains? Where the heart goes, everything goes, both the body and the soul. This is what is meant by surrender and devotion. Simply following in an intellectual way or by philosophical ways of thinking won't help you. Hafiz said, "If the learned men come to know just an iota of the madness we have got yearning for the Lord, they will forget everything and they will dance like anything." Do you see? Such a heart is the abode of the Lord. Even when we say prayers, we are thinking of the worldly children and this and that thing. Tulsi Das said, "Just clean your mind so that God, your beloved, may manifest himself there." Then he defines what is the cleaning of the heart. He says, "The heart in which no other thought other than that of God comes up is the pure heart. A heart in which there is love for God, yearning for God, is a fitting thing in which God manifests. That is why it is said, 'Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.' Purity means that." And the next reading is from Spiritual Elixir, Chapter 1, Social Conduct and Ethical Life. "I appreciate your selfless service for the holy cause of the Master. When you are privileged to conduct satsangs and convey instructions for initiation to the dear ones, under the protective guidance of the Master, it is a rare blessing to be instrumental in the divine setup. A spirit of selflessness and self-abnegation invokes his gracious mercy and compassion in great abundance. Your reverential humility and devotion for him will bless you with inner peace and harmony. Please convey my love to all the members in your group individually and encourage them to write to me about their spiritual progress at regular intervals so as to seek guidance when necessary." The moral code of an ethical life must be strictly adhered to. A pure and chaste life is a necessary prerequisite for progress on the path to God. These are fundamentals that allow no relaxation whatsoever. Anyone transgressing them will have to reap the fruit thereof. These words may sound stiff, but the Father does not wish his children to go astray. He has overwhelming love for them, and their uplift is his foremost job. "I am glad you have a better appreciation of the value of the satsang meetings, which are always inspiring, helpful, and beneficial, as Master's love and grace is radiated in abundance therein, and all those present receive the life impulses from the Master Power working overhead. In group meetings, the entire congregation assimilates the overflowing grace of the Master, and occasionally the radiant presence of the Master is experienced by the audience. Such meetings have a deep, inspiring significance, and therefore should be cherished in all loving devotion. It is a natural desire of an initiate to rise high in the inner planes and meet within the radiant and charming Master and enjoy his grace and blessings as well as the perfect peace and bliss of those regions. Difficulties often block the way. They must be overcome. You have a strong one over your head. Take refuge in him. Why should a child ever feel shy in writing to his father? Everyone who has learned to ride has experienced many a fall. To fall in sin is manly, but to remain there is devilish. Please do not be disheartened. Do avoid uncongenial society, and be regular and earnest in your meditations. Do your best, and leave the rest to the power overhead, and do not worry. No amount of worry will help you. Let him worry for you. You do your small part in humility. Romantic life on the physical plane appears charming. It has its attraction, but it is debasing. It leaves behind horrible bitterness and a dislike for life. Life on the higher planes is more romantic and gives eternal peace and joy. So why lose a higher, purer thing for lower and debasing transitory things? One has, therefore, to stick to one's principles and not violate the rules of purity and ethics. And he who does this will receive all the necessary help in his efforts and is greatly benefited. Those who are now better situated may have been like you some time back, or even worse off. They persevered and did the right thing. It gave them strength and power. You can do likewise. It is just a matter of starting anew. Start right now. The Master is anxious to see you progress. He wants his initiates to rise to sublime heights and have their bowls filled to the brim with the nectar of God consciousness. But the bowls must first be emptied of the rubbish that they contain in order to make room for the nectar to be put in. Seek only that company which is helpful to you. Discard all others lovingly and unprovokingly. You will surely make progress. But remember one thing. Rome was not built in a day. It required huge effort in toil from hundreds and thousands of people for a very long time. Your discipline may not have to be as severe, but you cannot have what you want so easily. You must work for it. But be sure that with a little work, you will get better results. The Master wants you all to develop love and humility. These must be lived with tolerance. It is regrettable that these virtues are absent in those with whom you come across. But that is no reason for anyone to go that way. Spiritual science is very definite, and whoever, even the vilest of the vile, follows it, is changed for the better. If some people who have been put on the way are not changed for the better, it is purely due to their fault, and not that the science is wrong. This is the most perfect way given out by all masters who came in the past. Our day-to-day life should be a living testimony of what we profess. This is the long and the short of the whole thing. Everyone must learn it, and the sooner the better. Reformers are wanted, not of others, but of themselves. It is better to see one's own faults and try to remove them than to pick holes in others. You have asked my consent to visit India, to sit at the holy feet of the Master. How can a loving father deny such a loving gesture for his beloved children, who have unquestionably a birthright in this respect? The Master and his congregation would be very glad to greet you and dear blank. I may, however, remind you of your spiritual obligations there in the States, which you have been fortunate enough to undertake, becoming a source of inspiration for many a dear one. If you can afford to have leisure to come, you may undertake the voyage. There is no objection to it. But please note that I am planning a world tour, which may mature before long, and I will be visiting your country by next spring, which will afford you the opportunity of traveling with me. I will be glad to see the manuscript of your beautifully written devotional poems, which you intend to compile for the welfare of the dear ones on the sacred path, and for raising funds toward the building of an ashram in the States. That will, with His grace, serve a cause and be a source of help and inspiration to many. I quite appreciate your adoration for the Master and your anguish for the emergence into His divinity. Please relax so that the gracious Master power engulfs you in its splendor and glory. Let the ego be completely annihilated, and you emerge out of and above the plane of duality, forgetting all about your I-hood. Self-denial and abnegation is another stepping stone to the climax of spirituality. Be completely immersed in the sweet glory of His remembrance, altogether oblivious of the past or the future. Just resign and surrender in favor of His divine will. The nectar of life needs a most transparent receptacle to be poured into for distributing to the thirsty children. You need not worry about the opinions of others. Views based upon one's own testimony are the best. Every person receives help according to his individual receptivity. All are on the way to perfection. All that each dear one has to do is to carry on with meditations regularly, with love, faith, and devotion, and to develop from day to day. All necessary help is extended from the Master Power, within and without. Attendance at the satsang is a very helpful factor for one's spiritual progress. The organizers, along with the laborers in the field, should always consider that the satsang is that of the Master, and offer their loving service and cooperation, however small, to add to the tranquility and congeniality of the satsang. I will be very happy to see love and sweet cooperation between the children of the same Father on the road to the same Godhood. Humanity has always been on trial. The human body is a precious asset granted by Providence in the ascending scale of evolution. Thy days are numbered is a positive truth. Those who earnestly work toward spiritual perfection under the protective guidance of the Master utilize their tenure on earth to the best advantage, which results in their eventual liberation from the wheel of life. A liberated soul becomes a source of help as well as an inspiration to others who cross his or her path. Although the tide of destruction is on the increase, and all of humanity is overtaken with the fear of annihilation from the destructive weapons, yet the benign Master Power controlling the destiny of child humanity is always exercising His gracious protection. It is an age of prosperity and spiritual grace being extended to all, irrespective of color, class, or creed. I appreciate your precious efforts in becoming instrumental in the divine setup. It is a rare blessing to be chosen for such a holy cause when you bring back the dreary and forlorn to the living Master for their spiritual liberation from the wheel of life. Your combined and cooperative efforts in this cause will bring life and light to many a dear one awaiting their turn. It is a reward in itself, and it is the climax of divine grace. Again, that was from Chapter 1 of Spiritual Elixir, Social Conduct and Ethical Life. And prior to that, I read Master's talk entitled Separation, which was given on January 20th, 1964.
Thank you, Marcia, for reading for us. By the way, Master's talk called Separation was printed in the August 1976 issue of Satsang Desh. There were 61 people at this evening's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So we have to decide what we want at heart of hearts. Are we here only for the worldly things? Are we here only for the name and fame of the world? Are we here only to have things of the other world or heaven? Are we really after only emancipation from birth and death? A real lover wants none of them, you see. He wants God and God alone.